You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/givetech.
It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Wednesday the 10th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Swedish law enforcement have apparently raided servers of the Pirate Bay. That's the popular website for downloading content, much of it not exactly legally obtained or disseminated. The Pirate Bay has been around for a while, and it's been playing a dangerous game, says director of the Institute for Innovation Law at the University of California, Hastings, Robin Feldman.
Torrent sites have played a cat-and-mouse game with authorities for some time. The difficulty is the gulf between what copyright law requires and what many people think is fair. Until that gulf can be bridged, pirating sites are likely to continue.
Feldman points out that in some ways, the Pirate Bay and so-called torrenting sites like it have been forcing a legal conversation around new technology issues of access and intellectual property.
The sites facilitate this type of pushback against copyrights. Without these sites, that won't happen.
Only one of the website's founders is not currently in the hands of law enforcement. He was released after being arrested earlier this year. By the way, Game of Thrones consistently breaks records for being the most illegally downloaded TV show, but next season might be different. HBO said this week its streaming-only service will be up and running by the time Tyrion, Sansa, and Arya and the rest of them pick up their storylines in 2015. Sticking with our theme, copyrighted material is a big issue for the vast expanding video network that is YouTube. Now that the company is launching a special music streaming service, it's getting more proactive, with a tool that warns uploaders and gives artists and record labels more control over their copyrighted audio. So let's talk a little more with New York Times technology columnist Molly Wood. Molly, how are you?
I'm well, Ben. How are you?
I'm well, but now Google's going to tell me, even before I upload my video, that it violates copyright? Is that what's happening?
That is what is happening. Although, on the plus side, at least you're now going to know, as opposed to the old system wherein your video would just disappear or the sound in that video would disappear because you had used a copyrighted track. So you could argue that that's an improvement.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it possible that this is like a win-win, both for the artist and the uploader?
Well, let's be honest. Fair use would be a win-win, but that's not going to happen. So considering the landscape that we live in now, this is actually very helpful for people.
The interesting thing about this is the artist or the label can now monetize the video when it gets uploaded or something. Why hasn't that been tried before?
For a long time, Google and YouTube resisted implementing technology that would detect copyright violations at all, because that put them in sort of a stage of being somewhat liable. This gives, I think, YouTube an opportunity to sit back a little bit, not have to do so much takedown work, make consumers happy, and make content creators happy. So I think all in all, it's actually quite clever.
Should we feel bad for the lawyers that aren't getting paid to chase after this stuff?
Do we ever need to feel bad for the lawyers? They'll find a way, Ben. There's still plenty of fodder on YouTube, and so I'm not worried that the lawyers will be out of business here. But this does make life easier for those people who do want to use a cool song as a soundtrack to their skateboarding video.
Our friend and New York Times technology columnist Molly Wood. Molly, always great to have you.
My pleasure.
Marketplace has been on the air for 25 years, and that couldn't have happened without the support from listeners like you. So please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today and help us keep our coverage relevant and compelling. And you should know that your gift, in any amount, counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Donate at marketplace.org by December 31st and help us reach our goal of at least 2,500 donors. Thanks for your support. E-waste is a big problem in India, as it is many places around the world. And one of the biggest negatives of throwing away our gadgetry is that some of it still has a bit of a positive charge. A recent study by IBM found that a majority of discarded laptop batteries could still be used to, for instance, light up an LED light bulb for 4 hours every day for a year. And that realization has led to a new kind of battery pack that's being tested. The BBC's Dave Lee is here with more. Dave, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Ben.
Now, how does this device work besides just using old laptop batteries? And what does it look like?
The device itself at the moment looks very homemade. It looks a very sort of kind of hacked piece of kit, which is the stage that this project's in. It's very much a concept. And at the moment, it's just the old battery kind of modified with a few bits of kit that just mean that the battery can be plugged into a light rather than, say, have the fitting for a laptop or something similar. And that's simply all there is to it. It's very crudely made, but in that wonderful kind of hacking approach, it's very functional. And they think this can be something that can be used by millions of people across India and other places that have this problem of not having enough electricity available to them.
As I understand, another problem in India is e-waste, and this might help with that issue as well.
Yes, so e-waste is a huge problem, not just in India, but in many places. But India in particular, because they have this kind of double problem. They have a lot of e-waste coming in almost every day. Also, India has a booming IT industry. And so they're generating their own e-waste as well as just receiving it from other countries. It's a way of finally making use of some of that stuff and using it to keep that tech going and to help people that don't have anything like the privilege we do.
Now, it sounds like the device itself works, and that's what they're, you know, using as a proof of concept. But as you're describing here, I'm wondering if the supply chain for this particular kind of device also offers some challenges.
It does. I think the key challenge for the researchers at this point is just figuring out a way to make these en masse. One of the big challenges, of course, is that not all the batteries have the same amount of power in them. So there's a logistical challenge in finding the batteries that have a lot in and the ones that are completely depleted. There's a lot of kind of administrative things they'll need to do, but those processes are kind of in place. And also there's an increasing pressure, kind of corporate responsibility pressure on companies that are creating this technology at the new end to invest in initiatives that help it out at the other end. So I think we'll see a lot more of that. I think we'll see some of the big companies come along and say, okay, we can back this particular idea because we know it works. We know it can be scaled, importantly, and just take it from there.
The BBC's Dave Lee. Dave, thank you very much.
No problem. Anytime.
And before we go, the state of Iowa has a solution for when you hop in the car and forget your wallet at home. The state's Department of Transportation is working on a free app to be released next year. You'll be able to show your phone instead of your ID when you're pulled over. Cool. Now do one that lets me never show up to the DMV office ever again. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.